8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Talk to Me here on Knotfest.com. There is no guest this week. These episodes will now be just Chris and I from here on out, and interviews will be separate little specials now. So there will be an interview next week, and it will be separate from these Talk to Me's with Chris Aiken here. So, Chris, how are we doing?
We are awesome. Now that it's all about us, it's even better.
Well, you know, you and I have talked for years, really, about, you know, interviews versus just two dudes talking and download numbers. And we noticed when we separated the Chris and I from the interviews that the downloads were bigger. So we're going to take that into consideration and take all the metrics and the numbers and analytics. And we're going to so Chris, you'll get Chris and I. And then if you want to check out interviews that I do, they will be separate from the Talk to Me show here.
Yeah. Well, this is the way it should be anyway. You bring in the true stars, you and I, and then all those other guys that you might have heard of before because of their music. Yeah, you can hear that somewhere else. Go ahead.
It's so funny, though. I was like, all right, sweet. I don't have to do as many interviews. And I was like, almost kind of like took a deep breath, right? And as soon as I took a deep breath, my inbox blew up like with, would you like to speak to this band, this band, this band, this band? I'm like, and I couldn't turn any of them down because they're all, you know, A-listers or B-listers or whatever in our world. And I'm like, God damn it. but yeah, I just recently did an interview with CJ from Drowning Pool, which will be fun. And then I did an interview with Dave Snake Sabo, which... you know, of all bands that I have never talked to on the podcast, Skid Row was probably up there as, you know, probably top five of the wish list. So get, you know, Snake Sabo on the show, man. Super awesome. And that I'm actually going to hold that until closer until the album came out. And I know you for Chris Aiken Presents did an interview with Rachel Boland. So
I did.
We've been all Skid Row this week.
It's all Skid Row all the time. And he was surprisingly good. And I say that not to be insulting, but I've interviewed Rachel before and he hasn't been like energetic really. He's just been kind of like, all right, it's interview 4 of 30, you know, he's been that guy, man. He came on, he was full of life and we were cracking jokes and busting each other's balls and stuff. It was a really fun interview. I was pleasantly surprised, but
yeah, the, Snake Sabo, he popped up and, you know, normally the publicist would be, you got 20 minutes, you got 30 minutes, you have an hour, you know, I was like, how long do you have? And he goes, I've got all day. I was like,
nice.
I was like, well, you don't want to tell me that, but I kept him right at an hour.
That's cool.
And it was, I totally fanboyed on him a few times. And, you know, he brought up the intro to Monkey Business. And I was like, did you write that? Dude, that was awesome. You know, I'm totally, was it like Chris Farley show? Like,
right.
Do you remember when you did that? That was awesome. So yeah, had a good time this week, man.
Meanwhile, I started with Rachel Boland saying, well, I got to be honest. I really didn't like this when I first heard it, you know, and instantly I just saw him like going, oh man. Like I saw him like getting ready to go into that bad phase. I was like, but wait,
there's more.
I got into it as I listened some more, you know, but almost killed that interview before it started.
Well, that's the way to start an interview is, I don't like your new album.
I just told him straight. You know what though, dude, you know this, man, you interview a ton of bands. There's nothing worse than you could do is then to say, oh my God, man, your new album's so fucking great. And then 2 seconds later, you're ripping it.
Yeah.
And I just won't do that. I just was like, you know what? I didn't feel it. We'll talk about why. And we did. And, you know, and we talked, I honestly, I think I told you this when I first heard it, the Skid Row record, I was like, you know, some of it sounds cool. Some of it's not so cool, but it kind of grew on me. I gave it like 10, 15 listens, especially over the weekend, since I knew I had Rachel coming on and I wanted to make sure that I, you know, I didn't want to just do all, hey, dude, Sebastian Bach.
When's the reunion coming, man?
Yeah, I didn't want to ask any Sebastian Bach questions, so I wanted to make sure I was pretty focused on the album.
Yeah.
And the more I listened to it, the more I sort of got it. I think the expectation, because they have been selling it as the return, the best thing since Slave to the Grind.
Yeah.
I think the expectation was there, and that's why I think I didn't like it at first, because I don't think it's as good as Slave to the Grind.
Right.
But once I got past that, just started listening to it just kind of as its own independent thing. It's like, okay, I see this. It's energetic. It's fun. It's got a lot of the old elements to it. And man, that kid brings it, man. That Grunwald, he brings it.
You know, it's funny. I think it was last week that we both had the album, and or 2 weeks ago, maybe. And we talked about if we were going to kind of give a review on it. Mm-hmm. And I think if we would have given the review 2 weeks ago, we would have kind of dragged it around the coals or whatever, dragged it over coals. And I think now, I think we're going to give it, I think you gave it, what, a 7.5 or something like that? Yeah,
7.58, somewhere in there. Yes. Now it's like growing on me.
Yeah.
It'll be album of the year in 2 more weeks.
But do you think it's the fact that you talked to Rachel and I talked to Snake, and had we not had to kind of get in that mode of really giving it a chance, if we would have really gotten into it? Because I've gotten texts from friends and they're just like, oh, this new Skid Row stuff is just, oh, you know. But so I'm kind of curious that if we fell into the trap of, which I've done many a time on the show,
yeah, I have too,
where you'll get an album by an artist that you don't really care for too much, and then you interview them and they're cool, and you know, you listen to the album again, you're like, you know what, this really isn't that bad.
Yeah, I honestly think it would have been some form of that, but I think the form that I would have taken would have been, if I wasn't interviewing them, I'd have been like, okay, I didn't dig it. On right. to the next, because I get 400 other things to listen to, and I would have probably never gone back to it. So
yeah.
The fact that I did have to interview Rachel really put me into, well, let me listen to it again and again and again and pick out some lyrics and pick out some things to actually talk about. And because of that, I really got into it. So yeah, now I'm a solid 7.5, 8 guy.
I was actually going to save the story for later, but I'll bring it up now just because it's obviously goes with what we're talking about. But yeah. Blabbermouth headline, Skid Row guitarist on Pantera return. It's a reunion, not a celebration. Snake Sabo spoke with the Talk To Me podcast.
Ooh.
And I did throw a clip of the interview up. And the only reason I bring this up is because it's funny how many people are like, why should we care what Snake has to say? And I want to go into the comment section and be like, because Snake works for the management company.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a true Pantera fan, you know the connection of the two bands. So it's really not that far out of left field question.
Sure.
Like when we talked about Five Finger Death Punch last week, that's kind of a bizarre question to ask as Old Time Bathory is about Pantera. But Skid Row obviously took Pantera out and friends over the years, and they were in each other's home videos and things like that. So
right.
Mm-hmm. Much more of a friendship there. And the fact that Snake Sabo does work for the management company kind of warrants that question.
And didn't Snake also independently manage Down?
Yeah, that's the whole
connection. Yeah, I mean, there, he yeah. works with McGee too, but
yeah,
but I mean, I don't think he was working with McGee with Down, was he? Or was he?
I think it's like a subsidiary kind of thing with
yeah.
Well, actually, it says Sabo, who manages Anselmo's Down project as a part of the successful management company McGee Entertainment. So maybe he's just one of his clients under the umbrella of McGee Entertainment. So it's gonna be, you know, good times. I can't wait for all this Pantera stuff and some Skid Row shows. I've never seen Skid Row live. I've seen Sebastian twice. Never seen Skid Row live.
Dude, I think I've seen Skid Row 15 times. You know, because you know, being in that 80s,
yeah,
you know, I was in my 20s in that time frame, they were everybody's opening band.
Yeah.
I mean, they opened for AC/DC, Guns N' Roses, Aerosmith. I mean, just everybody that was big at that time they opened for. And then obviously then they started, you know, when they got heavier, they took out Pantera. So I saw that tour numerous times. And then they flip-flopped like a year later as Pantera grew bigger than Skid Row. Then they took out Skid Row, and I saw that tour several times. And yeah, I've seen them a bunch. And then I saw them with every singer but ZP Tharp.
Right.
I did not see any ZP tours, but I did see Solinger. Oh, I didn't see Harnell either. Of course, that was what, 35 seconds he was in the band.
That form of Skid Row played here, though. They played the one of the years at Louder Than Life that I don't know why I wasn't there that day. I don't remember what happened, but I did not see Skid Row with Tony Harnell.
I would have liked to have seen that. That wouldn't have been bad. But
dude, Tony Harnell was at a Rockin' Pod one year,
yeah.
And I was not interviewing him. Like, he wasn't on my schedule, but he was on Cobras and Fire, which was like the booth right next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked over, and man, I think it was either me or Baco, but I blatantly like looked at him and was like, is that the guy from Skid Row? And Tony Harnell was not having it. Like, he did not think that was funny at all.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I think that was honestly like right after all that happened too. So your timing was an issue there.
Yeah, Tony a little bit bitter about not keeping that gig.
But super great guy, super nice guy. I mean,
he's awesome.
Yeah,
he's
Tony awesome. Tony was great at Rockin' Pod that year. It was like him and it was Tony Harnell and Michael Sweet were like the kings of Rockin' Pod that year.
Okay. Yeah.
And Dave Ellison was there too, but
Tony's been a friend of CMS forever cuz Neely's a huge TNT guy.
Nice.
So, we've known Tony for a long, long time, and all of his projects we've featured on the show at various times. And he's been, when he first joined Skid Row, we had him on taking calls. He took calls for like 2 hours. It was like the longest thing. He came on and said he would take all calls, and people just kept calling for like 2 hours of just him taking calls. And it was you should hear that segment at some point, dude. It's a smattering of him answering questions and me just busting on calls for having stupid calls. Harnell didn't know what to do because he's answered questions the best he can, but every stupid caller, you know, I'm just obliterating.
Right.
You know, well, I was a little drunk when I was doing the show.
Hey, Tony, when is Skid Row getting back with Sebastian? You know, shit like that.
Oh, and I would just kill that guy. I'd be like, why? Why do you want to know? You know, and Harnell be like, hey, easy, I'll answer that. I was like, no, fuck him.
One thing that Snake and I talked about in the clip that's out is, you know, I ask him point blank. I'm like, why has there not been an official statement from Pantera yet? Because there's technically still hasn't been an official statement, but they did share, I guess, a teaser that I sent to you. But you know, just the opening notes of Cowboys from Hell, and you know, a little bit of little film for your Instagram and your Facebooks and things like that. And they are rumored to be playing Knotfest Brazil and Mexico's Heaven and Hell Fest.
Right.
And my sources at Knotfest will not confirm nor deny Knotfest Brazil. So,
gee, thanks. Thanks for giving us the advance.
No, you cannot. But I already told the wife, I was like, I need if Pantera is playing Knotfest, I have to be there. Like,
you're gonna go to Brazil?
Yes.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not. But
is that a town in Kentucky? Brazil, Kentucky?
In Brazil, Idaho. You know, that's like that great town of Brazil, Idaho. So Pantera, some activity at least coming from the Pantera camp.
That's good. Dude, you know, it's going to be all next summer. That's probably why they're not announcing it yet, is because it's all next summer. So
sources, are telling me that this Heaven and Hell Metal Fest thing in December is most likely the first date.
Gig. But yeah. I'm still hanging on to Vakken. They'll be there. I'm thinking they're going to headline one of the nights there. They'll probably headline Sweden Rock. They'll probably headline one or more of the Wimmer shows.
I think they'll headline every Wimmer show, like Aftershock and what is it? Incarnation. By you?
Incarnation.
Well, there's Incarnation and
it used to be Rock on the Range. I don't know what it's called now.
Sonic Temple? Is that that's
yeah,
not
yeah, yeah. Anymore, there's something it? Temple. Yeah. Yeah. Temple of the Moon or some bullshit. I forget what they should have just left it Rock on the Range. That was a good enough name.
Right? That was a good name.
Yeah.
Or maybe is it Rock on the Range now and it was Sonic Temple? Or
no, it's not. Because I went to Rock on the Ranges. I have not been to Curious Temple or whatever the hell they're calling it.
Too funny. Well, I did have this for earlier in the show, but I guess we'll do it now. Especially with Pantera coming back. The one thing that we have coming back is my old band from the 90s. Bands from the 90s, we're coming back hardcore. But if you are in the Nashville area, September 18th at Dark Matter, my local band, my local rock star band, 12 Volt Negative Earth from back in the day, will be doing a show. So if you're a listener in the area, want to come hang out, I'll probably have some Talk To Me stuff. Probably won't put up a booth, but if you want to grab a t-shirt or something, I will have t-shirts there. But you know, we are doing a live stream on Facebook that will have already been done, but you can go back and check it out. Just kind of talking about the old days and all that stuff. Very specific time for a lot of people, but man, people are looking forward to it.
Sounds like fun. Now, how hard has it been for you relearning this stuff?
None at all. Well, because I wrote a lot of it, so it's
right.
And you go back and listen to it occasionally over the years, and you know, I've run through it one time and. It's funny how that stuff will just kind of just come right back to you. Like your hands will just go to the right notes and things like that. So yeah, it's been fun, man. I didn't think anything would ever happen again with that band. We put out the first CD in 1999. We did a 10-year anniversary of that album in 2009. And everybody was pretty adamant at that time that was probably going to be it. Okay. What we're doing is, this place called Lucy's Record Shop in Nashville, big punk rock club in the 90s, kind of the CBGBs of Nashville, if you will, or something right. like that. Like all the cool hardcore and punk bands played there. And then somehow my new metal band played there too. But but they're doing a 30th anniversary of the club and they asked us to do it. And we get asked to do stuff occasionally anyway. Like, hey, you know, we'll 12 will get back together to do this show or this, you know, benefit or whatnot. Because I mean, we were pulling, you know, 800 to 1,000 kids a night. Back in the day. And so, you know, there's still somewhat of an audience there. And even the reunion show we did in 09, you know, pulled a nice crowd. So I did the Lucy's Record Shop podcast. And at the end, she asked me if 12 Volt would want to play a 30th anniversary show. And I point blank told Mary, who ran Lucy's, I was like, I don't see it happening because we always get offers. And I always, you know, throw it out to the guys. I'm like, hey, do you guys want to do this benefit? Do you want to do that benefit? And it's always a pretty like hardcore no.
Right.
And then I was like, so I told her, I was like, I don't see it happening, but I'll ask around. And within half an hour, everybody was on board. Like, we have to do, nice. You know, we can't say no to Mary Mancini. It's basically what everybody said. So
why is it always a no? Is it just people are done with music and they're on to being accountants or whatever?
It's
actually
funny. It's the guys that are still in bands that don't want to do it. They don't want to go backwards and
okay.
you know, go back and do like the old school stuff. And, you know, and I guess you want to do it right. I mean, we're doing multiple rehearsals and
right.
you know, they're all still in Nashville. I got to drive down, but I'm going to go down, you know, multiple times. I busted out the treadmill again. I've been treadmilling it up. You know, trying to not be, I don't want to be old and winded right. on stage. Like, hang on guys, give me a second.
Foot firmly planted on one of the monitors for 12 yeah. songs.
be that guy for 12 songs. So, but yeah, man, I'm really excited to do the show and hopefully, you know, like I said, listeners come check it out and come hang out. And then obviously if you know, were into the band back then, you know, that's going to be a fun time too. Cause I posted some teasers, you know, on the Facebook and things like that. And so far everybody's like, what? You
know, like, nice.
Pretty pumped about it, man. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Sounds like a good time, dude. Now, will there be merch?
I don't think we're going to do any merch. I thought about it, but I don't think we're going to do merch. There's Talk To Me merch. You can always get your Talk To Me t-shirt, but
signed.
Yeah. I'll sign it, you know, link it, whatever you want me to do with it, man. But it's going to be fun, man. Just sitting there playing those old songs, stuff like that. And just kind of getting back into it. I had to buy new bass strings the other day. So I had to take out a second mortgage on the house and all that stuff. So.
Nice. That sounds fun, dude.
Yeah. And while on the treadmill today, I was checking out Dave Mustaine on Joe Rogan. I watched about the first 35, 45 minutes of that. Have you seen that?
I just saw maybe 10 minutes before we started that he was on, but I did not check it out yet. Good.
So far, I mean, it's so far the first 40 minutes of it is them talking about, you know, mixed martial arts and I mean, it's very similar to what he did with James Hetfield, where they talked about bees for like 2 hours.
Right.
Like, sure. You know, which is fine, which is, you know, you can tell Dave is a fan of Joe, mm-hmm. and Dave's honor, you know, you can tell he's honored to be there. He's really not being a dick. You know, he's being, you know, the whole, you know, just happy to be there. You know, let's have a good conversation kind of thing, rather than, you know, maybe some metal journalist type stuff. You know, it's not Ricky Rackman, it's Joe Rogan.
Right. Well, since I know we'll never see him here, I might as well watch it then, right?
Well, you know, hey, maybe one day, you know. As soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, he'll do Joe Rogan, but he won't do the Talk to Me podcast. That's right. I see how we're doing.
It's not like Joe Rogan's team manages him. Just Knotfest. But hey, why do we get an interview? Yeah, what right? for?
I have not gotten to this part of the interview yet, but the headline from it so far is Dave Mustaine says he was bothered by the fact that Metallica used his music after his departure.
You know what, Dave? Get over it.
Yeah.
It's been 40 years, bro. I mean, seriously, it's been 40 years.
Yeah. But
Get over it.
I don't think this is like a tweet. I mean, this is an in conversation and you know, he says it, but he says, when asked if it went right into Megadeth after his exit from Metallica or if he took some time to plot his next move, I think in my mind I went right into Megadeth, but at the time I was still trying to digest everything that took place. The thing that bothered me the most was I had all my music and I left it behind, and I said, don't use my music. And of course they did. They used it on the first record, Kill 'Em All, the second record, Ride the Lightning. And there's parts of my music on a song on the third record, Master of Puppets. All the solos on the first record are mine, except that they're just performed by Kirk.
Yeah. And again, I'll stand by what I just said. Get over it. Stop answering the question. Metallica has not been with Dave Mustaine in 40 years.
Right.
He had all the chance in the world to say this, at which he did. I mean, Lord knows, every interview he's done, I think, throughout his 40 years has been talking somewhat about Metallica. Time to end that nonsense. He's a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer himself without Metallica. So stop it. Or he should be.
He will be. I think I understand. I mean, this kind of goes back to, you know, us talking about the 12 volt negative earth thing, totally different level. But a lot of those songs I either wrote or had a hand in writing. And so when I left the band, I mean, they did continue to play my music, but obviously they weren't, once again, not Metallica, not Megadeth, whatever. But I still understand what he means by, like, you know, don't use my music. And of course they did, because I get that, you know, he's getting paid from Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, Master Puppets. And I think it was Ryan J. Downey who asked, I think he might have even asked Ellefson if he thought that if Dave Mustaine could have just lived for the rest of his life off of the royalties off of those first three Metallica albums. And I think Ellefson said yes.
Like, yeah, probably could.
And lived comfortably for the rest of his life without Megadeth. I know it has something to do with Ryan J. Downey, and I could be getting the interview all wrong. But with all that being said, it's still You ask Rachel Bolan, what's your favorite song on the new album? And he goes, I can't tell you which one because they're all my babies. You know, mm-hmm. that whole cliche. So, I mean, you've got Dave Mustaine here being like, don't use my music. And then they did. The one thing that I always thought was cool about Metallica with this is they still credited him.
Sure.
Which I think that, because in 1983, when Kill 'Em All comes out, I mean, were they really thinking that it was going to blow up as big as it did? And, you know, that Mustaine would come back and be like, hey, I wrote that song, or I wrote this song, you know, like I've always kind of given them somewhat of credit for being honest in that part. I guess there are other people out there that say, you know, that they ripped off this person or that person, but they've always given Dave Mustaine the credit that he's, you know, deserves.
Here's where this drives me crazy. If Metallica would have gone on to become Heathen or Forbidden instead of Metallica,
yeah,
no one would be asking him this question, and he certainly wouldn't be bringing it up. He's only bringing it up because Metallica became the biggest band in the world, and he's trying to attach his riffs to the bigness of the band. That's what he's doing, and he needs to stop it. He's had his own success.
Well, I'll say in my watching of the Joe Rogan podcast, Joe Rogan immediately starts in with, like, he calls him like former Metallica guitarist Megadeth. Like, he says Metallica first. Like, Joe is pushing the Metallica part. But I think this too is, if you and I sat down and interviewed Dave Mustaine,
that would never happen, and
we brought up Metallica, I think Dave would probably just be like, interview over kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think Joe's on such a big platform and it's such a different world that I think, you know, that's to a lot of Joe Rogan listeners. I think this is new news to them.
No, that's what you get when you do interviews with guys that really don't know shit about your fucking career. Sorry, but that's the way it goes. Yeah. That's why it always drives me crazy when any of these big bands turn down doing podcasts with actual fans or shows with actual fans, and instead go for the LA Times or Joe Rogan, or, you know, and nothing against Joe. I watch Joe all the time too. That's why he has 10 billion listeners or whatever. But, you know, you're going into an environment where they don't know your career. And he's dumbing down his career to Joe Rogan. He's not making Joe bring himself up to his career.
I wonder how the streams for this episode does for Joe. Like, obviously this is going to be a big interview for Dave, but I wonder how it does for Joe.
Probably less. Yeah. Well, I don't know, because a lot of times Joe interviews, you know, some guy that studies the philosophy of birds or whatever. You know, I mean, he interviews some really odd people sometimes, and those do great numbers too. So I don't know. Joe's an enigma to himself. I think anything he does 5 to 10 million views, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. I think he averages like 11 million a week or month. I can't remember, but it's something.
It's some crazy number.
Yeah. It's something ridiculous.
Well, the thing I always wonder with any of these big bands that do big interviews for the big things is, does it really translate to sales?
Yeah.
Does somebody that's a fan of the aliens or whatever that Joe's talking about, or weed legalization or whatever Joe would be talking about, do they really give a shit about Metallica or Megadeth or Korn or any metal band? I don't think so.
I wonder. I mean, obviously it just opens up, you know, maybe some of those guys you're talking about will at least kick on Spotify, go over and check out maybe something off the new album, or, you know, a classic song, or, you know, those guys are like, oh yeah, I remember those guys from the 80s from the MTV News or something like that.
Right.
And they'll go back and play some of the old stuff too. So I'm sure it's kind of like Stranger Things and Master Puppets to an extent, you know. It's like, it's opening Megadeth up to a different audience, that, because that's the one thing that I've always kind of heard, when you get guys like a Metallica or a Dave Mustaine or the big of the big. And, you know, you're, if they do my show, I mean, it's just an echo chamber of, you know, they're all just metal fans already listening to metal podcasts and metal, you know, but you get outside of this and you get into a Good Morning America's and Joe Rogan and things like that. I mean, that's just, you're opening yourself up to a much wider audience, and, you know, maybe someone will listen to it. And kind of like what you and I talked about earlier with when you listen to like the new Skid Row and you talk to Rachel Bolan and you want to, you get more into the album because you like the person. So I think that this opens that up to people that may or may not like Megadeth might at least check it out and maybe give it a little bit more of a fair shake, rather than just like, oh, the new Megadeth album.
Well, I'm sure some of those Joe Rogan people, they'll enjoy listening to The Memory Remains or Enter Sandman today. I'm sure they will.
Right.
All those Megadeth, all those Dave Mustaine classics, King Nothing.
I was just blown away that he was on, you know, the Joe Rogan show. That's a big get for Dave Mustaine. And crazy to say, you know, because
it's good for him. I mean, look, I'm not shitting on him for doing it. I'm just saying, I just don't know how much it helps. I guess some. Yeah. I mean, I guess if you get 5 million people to listen to anything, it's going to impact it somewhat.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's why those guys will do more. They'll do the classic radio, you know, FM radio stuff, because they know that there should be, you know, much wider listenership in that one town and whatnot.
Yeah, probably true.
But, you know, so far so good on the interview. I mean, obviously, like I said, I'm about 30 or so minutes in. That'll probably tell you how long I was on the treadmill. and but yeah,
I'm 6 minutes in.
Oh god, yeah, I'm dying, tapping out. But yeah, it's. I mean, he talks about the martial arts side of himself, which, you know, not a lot of rock journalists are going to talk to Dave Mustaine for half an hour about MMA and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's good.
I don't know, do you watch MMA at all?
Very rarely, but I watched it. I remember watching like UFCs like 1, 2, 3.
Okay. Oh yeah, the where they just killed each other.
Where there's just like giant guy with a little guy, and just, you know, no like rules. Because I mean that's what it was. Everybody was like, "Dude, have you seen this UFC? It's crazy." Sure. You know, it's like, and I mean UFC and like ECW and all that stuff kind of came around. Roughly around the same time. Sure. So it was just like ECW wrestling was just thumbtacks and barbed wire. And then you've got right. The UFC over here, just no rules, no
right.
Know, mitts, no nothing.
Sure.
So, yeah. But actually it was funny. Cause like totally off the subject, but the Horse Gracie stuff, like they would just go to the ground and all, and that was almost like you wanted like two people standing fighting. And
yeah.
Then, like the Gracie family just came in and just, they'd like latch onto you.
Yeah, and it was over,
and then it was over.
It was no matter how big the guy was, too. He'd be fighting some 380-pound guy that's like 6'8". The minute that guy went to the ground, it's like, all right, this is done.
Yep.
And you wouldn't know why either. They would just be kind of rolling around on the ground, and they'd be like, okay, tap, tap, tap. You wouldn't know what the hell. And then they'd show some weird angle, and you'd see how he's twisting his wrist like backwards or something. It's crazy. But
yeah.
No, the reason I bring it up, it is related to Rogan. I was watching the UFC prelims on ESPN over the weekend. They had the whatever pay-per-view number it is, 399 or whatever the pay-per-view number was. And I think Rogan is going to have to quit MMA because doing the announcing, because he's bigger than all of the fighters now. A in size, but B in stature.
Yeah.
And like every one of the prelim fighters, he would, you know how he comes in after and he's like, hey, you just won. Tell us about that punch to the head that you took or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, every single one of those guys that he interviewed this week was like, Joe, it is an honor to meet you. I can't believe I'm meeting you, Joe. You know, it's like they're starstruck by the announcer guy coming in, trying to hype him, like where he can't hype him anymore. Because they're more hyped to meet Joe than they are to talk about their win over whoever they're fighting. It happened 2 or 3 times in the preliminaries. I was like, man, it might be time for Joe to step away.
Was that clip that I've seen going around of the guys just like, I'm just too old. Like they asked him like what happened in the fight. And he just like starts to explain it. And then he just stops and he goes, I'm just getting too old. Like, was that from this weekend? Or
I don't know. That might have been in the main event, which I didn't buy the pay-per-view. I just watched the prelims.
Right.
But it could very well be. Dude, MMA is the weirdest sport ever, man. It's like you're on top of the world, and then one fight later, you're done.
Yeah, you were the worst fighter ever.
the biggest example of that was Chuck Liddell.
Yeah.
Liddell was unstoppable. Until he got hit one time in the face, and that was it. I mean, he was over. Then he fought like 3 or 4 fights in a row where he just got knocked the hell out. He was just done. There's no, you know, in every other sport, there's that decline period.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm sure especially in with the Texans, I'm sure you're sitting there watching Derrick Henry just waiting for that to come.
But yeah.
What did I say? Texans?
Texans.
Oops. Well, you know.
Wrong Houston franchise.
Got Deshaun Watson on the brain.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
But yeah, I do.
Hopefully he's not on your back.
No, not on my back. Although I do want to buy one of those give me a massage bitch t-shirts in the worst way. I got to have one. But no, Henry's going to decline eventually. He's going to lose just the slightest step or the slightest amount of power, and his career is going to be done.
Yeah,
you know, and it'll be quick. It'll be within a year. He'll go from being awesome to being average in, roughly a year, and that seems quick. MMA, I mean, it could be like this month you're awesome, next month you suck.
Right.
It is that fast how MMA changes, man. It's what makes the sport exciting because there's really nobody that's ever too dominant.
Yeah, the it's kind of like when the it's like whoever loses the Super Bowl all of a sudden like is somehow the worst team ever.
Yeah.
like the Bengals, you know, lose the Super Bowl and you're like, oh, they're the worst team. They suck. And I'm like, they just won the AFC and they're you know, the runner up kind of thing. But yeah, it's just like this team's mm-hmm. awesome. You suck.
Yeah. Yeah, because of one game.
Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy how sports works like that. But MMA is the worst of it all, I think, where it just changes overnight.
Let's dive into one more story before we get into some polls and get into some recommendations. But Tommy Lee says that he shared his penis photo after going on a motherfucking bender.
Okay.
Motley Crue drummer Tommy Lee says that he posted a nude photo on social media earlier in the month after going on a motherfucking bender during a break in the band's The Stadium Tour. Tommy addressed his nude photo controversy while speaking to the audience at a Motley Crue concert Sunday night, August 21st in San Antonio, Texas. He said in the video below, "A couple of weeks ago, we had like a 2-week break off the tour. I went on a motherfucking bender, bro. A bender. I got fucking sideways as fuck and got naked and posted pictures of my dick. And usually, I mean, I'm a titty man, so I like to see titties, but tonight it's equal opportunity night. Tonight I want to see everyone's dick. Come on, pull your shit out. Pull your fucking junk out. Let's go."
Well, good for Tommy. Good to see he's classy as always.
Well, that's the one thing, man. Nobody's got it like Tommy Lee, so I'm sure there weren't too many wangs coming out at this San Antonio show.
No, definitely not. Hey, whatever. Tommy Lee, look, he's a piece of shit. Why would you expect him not to be a piece of shit? I mean, that's really that is the gist of it. He is a long-term piece of shit. He's been that way for his whole life, his whole career. So why would you expect him to do something? Why wouldn't you expect him to do that?
I think if you had Tommy Lee pulling his dick out on Instagram, you know, you would have been like, yeah, like no, the blabbermouth headline was, you know, Tommy Lee shocked fans. Like nobody was shocked by that photo. It was like, oh yeah, there's Tommy Lee. that's what he does.
And let's face it, if we all had Tommy Lee's dick, none of us would wear pants. I mean, right. It's just the way it is. Why would you?
I mean, that's the reason when I film, I'm only from the waist up because I don't want to, you know, offend anybody with
You're actually planking right now, right?
Yeah, right. Too funny, man. But yeah, Tommy Lee, the other part I think we talked a little bit about too was how long that photo stayed up, because how many girls on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, well, not Twitter because Twitter's a cesspool of nonsense, but right. You know, they'll throw stuff up and immediately get banned and whatnot. I don't think Tommy Lee got anything but like a slap on the wrist, if anything.
A stern warning. Hey, don't do that again.
Don't do that again. Let's dive into some, I want to start doing some polls. So if you follow, the Talk To Me podcast on Twitter, which is at Talk To Me Talk on Twitter, throw up some polls and we'll kind of talk about the results here.
All right.
The first one, we're a very heavy Pantera show.
What?
But the question was, will you go see Pantera? The answer is yes, absolutely. Yes, but with hesitation. No, or hell no. And with a astounding 38%, no one won the poll. And then hell no was in second place. So
really?
Pretty surprised, man, that yes, absolutely was only 12%, man.
Well, I'm glad to know that there'll be plenty of tickets for me to buy.
I'll just take the front row.
That is correct. I'm going. Put me down for a yes. I didn't see the poll, but put me down for a hell yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yes. That was the one that threw me off, man. Was just how negative or how anti this Pantera tour people are.
But you know what? Everybody's going to say that until it's announced in their city.
Yeah.
Put that same poll up once the show dates are released for purchase.
Right.
But and you know what? Remember this. Write it down somewhere. When the shows are released, put up a new poll that says, did you buy tickets to the Pantera show?
Yeah.
in your city, and it's going to be 78% yes, guaranteed. Well,
I think that if I remember correctly, your stance on the Hardwired tour, you were like a stern no until it got close to the time,
and then
like,
I went. Fuck.
Mm-hmm. And then you bought $400 nosebleed seats.
Nosebleed seats and had a terrible time. Yeah, and had an awful time. Wish I wouldn't have, but I still did. Look, and believe me, the Pantera, Metallica was just here in Pittsburgh. It's like 2 hours from my house. And it's the first time I've ever not gone. Right. Ever. And I ain't going to lie to you and tell you that I was watching Metallica videos all night while I knew they were in Pittsburgh. And even at like 6 o'clock at night, I was like, man, if I get in the car right now, I could probably get there. I might miss a song or two, but I could probably catch an hour and a half of the show. And I thought about going.
Yeah.
And then I just was like, no.
You're looking on StubHub or whatever.
And... yeah. Been buying hotel rooms from the car.
Louder Than Life is a month away here in town. And I just threw up the poll of which night are you most excited to see? Thursday, headliner Nine Inch Nails. Friday, Slipknot. Saturday, Kiss. Sunday, Red Hot Chili Peppers. And an astounding 60% Slipknot.
Wow. Well, for financial reasons, I'll say Slipknot. But if you asked me if I was very drunk, I would say the Thursday night, because I love Nine Inch Nails live. They're so good.
That's another band I don't think I've ever seen.
Ever?
No.
Do you like them or no?
I've just never been a giant fan of them. But they're one of those bands that, like, if they're on, I really like them. But it's not something I've ever, like, really, searched out.
Right. You're going, right? You're going to
Loud. Yeah. I got it.
Are you going to go on Thursday?
Yeah, I'm gonna go all 4 days. The press pass. Actually, we're giving away four-day general admission tickets to Louder Than Life that will be out today. So make sure to check socials if you entered that contest.
Nice. Well, make sure you get out there and watch Nine Inch Nails, because they put on a fucking killer show, man. I mean, they're really good live.
Yeah,
really heavy. A lot heavier than the records.
I definitely have to check it out. I mean, obviously, I love. You know, I'm definitely early Nine Inch Nails guy, like the Wish EP and all that stuff.
Right, sure.
And then final poll, as I got off the thing here. Final poll, can Metallica be canceled? Because no. We talked to 86%, not a chance.
There's no chance. They're way too big for that. And honestly, part of being canceled is to take them from their money. They don't care. They've got all the money they are ever going to need. Even with Hetfield going through a divorce, he's still going to have more money he's ever going to need. So,
right.
You know, you can't cancel it. And honestly, fans of Metallica really don't give a shit if TikTok is mad. Let's just be honest about that. They don't care. They could care less what some 20-year-old girl that's never seen Metallica, or, you know, basically was born probably to the memory remains, you know, they don't give a shit what she thinks, you know, I mean, it's like, just stop it. It's not happening. No way. Yeah. Big no.
So yeah, head over to Talk To Me on Twitter at Talk To Me Talk and participate in the polls, man. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then we will get into some, let's get into some recommendations for the week.
All right. Want me to go?
Yeah, you can go first.
All right, I got one and one. TV wise, The Girlfriend That Didn't Exist on Netflix.
Yeah,
the Manti Te'o story. Man, I'm not buying it as much as everybody seems to be. Everybody seems to be going with the whole Manti Te'o was, you know, this poor innocent schlub that just got, you know, he was naive and he got catfished real bad.
Right.
I'm not going for that fully. He was like the runner-up in the Heisman. He was super, super famous, and somehow he had a girlfriend that he never met or saw.
Right.
And he wasn't out there banging other girls on the fucking college campus. Get out of here. I'm not buying that part of it. That part seems beyond belief to me, that instead of running around as the most famous person at Notre Dame at the time, he wasn't going to any parties and hooking up, or, you know, he was just waiting for this mysterious girl that he could never even FaceTime with on the phone or nothing. That seems weird and unbelievable to me. Now, maybe it's because I'm a scumbag, but.
Was her name Lene Kakua?
Lene Kakuna or something like that.
It's funny because the one of the sports shows I listened to in Nashville for the longest time, they had a segment called the Lene Kakua like high school game of the week, and they would, because one of the guys wasn't from the area, so they would always name, they'd be like, all right, you know, there's three games they would choose, they would throw out, and they'd be like, you know, Gallatin versus Hendersonville, Hunter's Lane versus Beach, and you know, Sacred Heart versus blah blah blah, and you know, one of them was a fake game.
Right.
So like that was the game was the Lene Kakua high school game of the week, because one of them was fake.
Nice. I do feel bad for that cat though. Man, he did take a beating.
Oh,
I mean, he took the memes alone. That was brutal. He took some serious heat, but whatever. Yeah. He kind of deserved it.
Yeah. I haven't watched it, but man, that I just remember that whole time period, man, he was just getting, did they ever say why he came out and said something about it? Like, why didn't he just not say anything?
Well, they did. It really wasn't him. It was, as it was all going on, the story was that his grandmother died and the girlfriend died on the same day.
Oh, okay.
And so he said something like in a press thing that he was dedicating a game or something to the memory of his grandmother and his dead girlfriend. And then somebody tipped off Deadspin that there was no girlfriend, that it was fake. And then Deadspin investigated it and found out that it was fake, but he didn't know. Deadspin seemingly knew before he knew. And then, and then there was some kind of thing where he did know. Oh, it was at the Heisman. It was when he made his speech at the Heisman Awards, you know, before another fucking winner, Johnny Manziel, took the trophy. but right before that, he made this speech about his, you know, his season and whatever. And he did know, but he still made a speech about, you know, dedicating the season to the memory of his girlfriend and blah, blah, you know, even though he knew he'd been catfished. So, I mean, it's a lot of bad. You got to watch it to really get it. There's a lot of moving parts in it, and
yeah,
and the girl guy, whatever, Lene, is is absolutely mentally ill, and not because of choice, just is mentally ill.
Right.
If you can watch that and say that's not a mentally ill person, then I'm in the wrong planet, because that's a mentally ill person, and believable. That's when they interviewed the Lene person, that was very, I don't think she was lying. I think she really believed her bullshit that she was unhappy in her life and found a better life. Remember when Second Life was a thing, the game? Remember that game, Second Life? It was like online. And Second Life, it was basically just that. If you were unhappy in your regular life, you'd go on and start a new one online with Second Life.
Well, that's just the internet now.
Yeah, well, it is. But Second Life was one of the originals of that.
Okay.
And she really just kind of did that with Facebook. Just created this profile and started friending people. And she even said she would go as far as she could in the relationship until the pressure got to her to where she was going to be found out, and then she would just, you know, ghost people.
Right.
And for some reason with Manti Te'o, probably because he was famous or he was getting famous, she didn't do that. She just stayed with it until it was too late. And then the weird thing is, I don't believe that she wanted to, you know, wreck this guy the way she did.
Right.
I just think she was just dumb. And he was just dumb, but it turned into, it cost him millions of dollars. I mean, this guy was set to be, you know, a number one or two draft pick.
Right.
And instead, I think he fell to what, the third or fourth round or something. There was some huge fall, and he never recovered because he was mentally broken from all the memes and just horrendous press he got.
So, oh, too bad.
It's a great documentary. It's not a great story, but it's a great documentary.
Yeah, I've seen it pop up. I definitely want to check it out.
Yeah, you want to see that one. And musically, even though I don't know if we're allowed to talk about it or not, that Machine Head record is just ripping my face off day after day after day after day. What is it called? Of Serpents and Crowns or something like that? Or of Crowns and Men or something?
I've seen a few websites that already putting out their
reviews
of it. So yeah, it comes out what, Friday?
I think, I don't know. I just know it's awesome. As much as I was ready to be done with Machine Head after Catharsis, and I was, and I hated Catharsis with everything in my soul. And I like Phil Demmel, so.
Right. Of Kingdom and Crown.
Of Kingdom and Crown. I think it's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've listened to about half of it. I didn't make it all the way through, but yeah, even just track one alone, you're sold, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to put it up there with the classics from them. I'm going to put it up there with like Burn My Eyes or The Blackening in that greatness level. It's fantastic. I can't believe how good it is, especially after how bad Catharsis was. So good.
Right. Oh yeah. It's definitely, it's a return to form, and it's kind of that same, you know, where we didn't want to like the new Megadeth.
Mm-hmm.
And because we love Dave Ellefson so much.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing, because Phil Demmel's been on the show multiple times.
Yeah.
And
he's like, on mine too. I love Phil.
And you want to support him. And then, and then this comes out and you're like, damn it, man. So good.
It is. So those are my two, Machine Head and that documentary.
The show, it's actually, I guess it's a little bit older, maybe. Let me see when it came out. Yeah, it came out last year. It's called Dope Sick. It's a mini series about the OxyContin, and kind of the epidemic that they created.
Right. That's the one with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, Michael Keaton and a bunch of like, just, you know, a bunch of people that when you see him, you're like, oh yeah, I know that guy.
Right.
But man, we've been watching it, and just the more I watch it, the more just pissed off I get. And it's it's not even that I don't think I've ever had OxyContin. I don't think I was ever prescribed it for anything. I never really went to the doctor, so right. I don't think. But I just know that like when my dad goes to the doctor, he's afraid of pain medicine because of that. So, you know, everybody's now just afraid of prescription pain meds, and then. You know, I'm in Southern Indiana, you know, Louisville, Kentucky area.
Sure.
And I'm sure it's the same, but where you are, man, just the small towns around here decimated by, you know, because people went from OxyContin and then heroin. It was just, you know, and it just meth, you know, and meth and everything else just decimated these like rural towns. And then they go in the miniseries, they talk about it, like some of the first places that they release OxyContin was for people that were having, you know, a lot of pain, which was mining towns and just kind of towns that were kind of on the verge of collapse anyway. And then they introduced this stuff to it. And then you saw pain clinics popping up and stuff, man. It's just that whole industry just needs to be just destroyed.
Yeah, it's a mess on both sides. It's a mess on both sides. You know, the other, now because of that, people that actually need pain meds can't get them.
Yeah.
You know, my mom just had back surgery, and pretty major back surgery where they put in plates and fuse shit and like, you know, lots of back surgery, like scar this long type of back surgery. And she wasn't given pain meds when they went home. She was given a script, and then they wouldn't fill the script because the pharmacist didn't get the right phone call or some shit. So she had to go like a day and a half without pain meds, fresh out of surgery. It's like, and it's because of this same thing, because they're so now worried that people are going to take that script and then go sell it, you know? And so now they're like super crazy careful about the scripts as well. And then they wonder why people end up doing meth. You know, the meth thing is crazy around. Like, I don't know. Like you said, you know, do we see it around here? Yeah. When Live PD did, this is 2 years ago or something, but one of the towns they worked in was the town right next to me where I graduated high school, Streetsboro, Ohio. And like every single stop was a meth stop. I watched it for like that 2 or 3 months that they were here, and every single stop was, hey, what are you doing? Well, I'm driving without a license plate. Well, guess what? Now I also got 2 pounds of meth in the back seat. Right. You know, it was like every stop was meth. It was crazy. And it's, yeah, smaller towns are just getting destroyed by meth. Yeah. That is for sure.
And it's funny, man, because I like the, you know, Claritin D, you know, for the allergies. Sure. And you go to the pharmacy for that stuff and you feel like you just feel like you're doing something wrong because you have to give them your license. They scan it. They see how much you've bought for the month and make sure you're not buying too much.
Right.
And then it gets to a point where like you run out and then you go back and like, oh, you're declined. And then you feel like you're like, what do they call it? Smurfing or whatever. When you like try to buy too much of it and stuff. I'm like, just give me my allergy medicine, man. Yeah. I'm not doing anything wonky with it.
Yeah, it's not like you're crushing it up and snorting it, for God's sakes. The reason you're taking it is because you can't snort anything.
Right.
Your damn passages are clogged up.
But and the only musical recommendation this week is my son has now branched out into listening to, like, he has like a metal playlist now, which blows me away. But we were listening the last few days on the way to school. He's been like playing Korn and stuff. I'm like, where did this guy come from? But it made me actually go back and listen to, Life is Peachy. And that album still does just not stand up.
Stop it.
I said, does not stand up.
All right, like, good.
It's got a couple of good songs on it, but as a full album, not so good.
Yeah, I hate that album. That's the one album by them I just do not like.
Well, I think it was they were starting to blow up, and I think they just wanted to record something quickly, so they took like, oh, this worked on the first album, let's just make songs out of it.
Yeah. Well, I'll throw one more recommendation in here since you got me absolutely wired in again. You posted on your stupid Facebook about nothing face. And that's been like pretty much my whole day today.
Yeah. Was
listening to Atrocity and Skeletons, you know, just all day long was Nothing Face, which forgot how damn good they were. I didn't forget, but it had been a minute since I'd listened. And man, just going back, that was a damn good band. Rest in peace, Matt Holt.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. For as much as I don't get along with whatchamacallit there, Tom. Yeah. It's funny, man. I'll post about the podcast and I'm like, new episode out with blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Crickets. I post this photo of the cover of Nothing Faces Skeletons, 255 likes, 94 comments, 23 shares. I'm like,
nice.
Come on, people.
You reminded a bunch of people like you did me.
Yeah, it's funny how many people are like, now I'm listening to this on the way home or whatnot. But yeah, it came on during, you know, on the treadmill. I was listening to Spotify kind of on random, and I was like, man, this album is just so good.
It is. Definitely good stuff.
Well, let's leave with that. Let's leave with one story I actually told you to talk about the other day. And we'll do one off not music story.
All right.
I think you'll enjoy this. But the Japan wants young people to drink more alcohol. It's just not sure how to convince them.
Well, if I was younger, I'd move.
So in Tokyo, the Japanese government has been hit in the pocket by an unusual problem. It's young people aren't drinking enough. Since the pandemic began, bars and other premises that sell alcohol have been hit hard by COVID-19 restrictions, causing sales and liquor tax revenues to plummet in the world's third largest economy. The government's solution is to launch a contest to find new ways to encourage young people to drink more.
There you go. Good idea.
The Sake Viva campaign, overseen by the National Tax Agency, invites participants to submit ideas on how to, quote unquote, stimulate demand among young people for alcohol through new services, promotional methods, product designs, and even sales techniques using artificial intelligence or the metaverse, according to the official competition website.
All right. So what are your suggestions? How do you make people drink more?
I mean, it's just the same old stuff. I mean, you either get a cool dog, you know, that like Spuds McKenzie that you just want to party with, or, you know, girls in bikinis. That seems like a pretty good go-to when it comes to alcohol sales. And you know, just that's what you need to do. Get a cool dog, and girls in bikinis. There goes the Japanese alcohol problem.
You just incentivize. That's what I'm thinking. How about free shots with every lap dance? You know how much money I would spend on lap dances to get the free shots? Plenty. Or go the other way. Free lap dances with every round of shots that you buy for your table or something. The tax agency would probably be fixed in like 35 days.
Yeah, just kind of going through the story a little bit more. It's just the Japanese version of a pub or tavern were particularly hit hard, with the latest available figure showing sales halved from 2019 to 2020. So they did half of the business.
Dude, that's anywhere though. There's half of the people that are going to shows. There's half of the people going out.
I just kind of wonder if it says with fewer opportunities to drink in public, the rate of household consumption drinking at home increased significantly, which that was, you know, what happened here too.
Sure.
And I think, you know, most people drank more at home and probably drank more just because of the, you know, the pandemic just kind of drove a lot of people to drinking.
Sure.
So, but yeah, just we got to get the Japanese out to the bars more. Yeah.
Well, dude, in your own personal life, and I don't think you're not like a big drinker, are you? I mean, you'll throw down sometimes, but not really.
I'm the type of drinker. If I have one drink, I have to have all the drinks.
Yeah.
So that's my problem.
All the drinks to you more than 10 drinks? If you're just going to get shit faced, will you do shots until you pass out?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm not a shots guy though, so I'll drink like beer until I pass out, right, or wine or whatever,
or something,
like, right, or die, you know. Yes, or end up like, you know, waking up on the back porch. Like I'm a terrible drinker, so I'm not a good. Like, right. I definitely know not to drink outside the house if I don't have a ride home. Like we took care of that a long time ago. But the wife, every day, 2 beers after work,
three beers.
She's, you know, she's 2 beers after work, fine. 3 beers, falling asleep on the couch. Like me, if I have 2 beers after work, I'm having.
Yeah, you're drinking the whole case.
I'm drinking the whole case and like trying to figure out like how I'm going to, you know, order Uber Eats, you know, for another case to come right behind it.
Yeah.
And speaking of Tony Harnell and Michael Sweet and all that stuff, I mean, that night, I mean, we everybody was down at the bar, and I'm a keep the party going guy. I'm not
right.
Like, I'm not, all right, well, it's 9:30. I'm going to go back up to the hotel room. I'm like, crawl back to the hotel room guy.
Sure.
Yeah. Might sleep in the hallway.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you drink more or less now
than
pre-pandemic?
Oh, well, yeah, still way less. I think we drank more during the pandemic. I think, you know, we would grab a bottle of wine here and there, and, you know, but as for, yeah, since the pandemic, probably haven't, well, maybe just a hair more, you know, maybe a little bit more here and there with dinner and things like that.
Yeah. Cause I'm like a million times less. And you've heard the stories. I have had some legendary parties here at the house,
but you don't drink as much during like CMS nights and things like that. Like
I used to start drinking at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon and then just go until 3 o'clock in the morning with the CMS. I would be just hammered.
Right.
But now I'm drinking water nonstop. You know, it's, you know, because I'm trying to actually be a little more coherent. I listen back to some of those old CMSs and I'm like, yeah, that's great, man. You know, it's like, oh boy.
Well, I've told the story, but at the first Rockin' Pod, like I didn't have any interviews set up.
Right.
So, and then on top of that, the sound guy or whatever, they needed a recorder to record the live shows that were going on. So, and since I didn't have anything going on, I offered up my, you know, portable Zoom recorder. Sure. So at that point I'm done for the day. Like my brain is like, you don't have to worry about nothing.
Right.
So I started drinking. Ian Wadley's there. you know, slipping me Pabst under the table, and you know, we're just drinking. I think it was open bar. I think first year maybe open bar or
okay
something. But I got fucking shitty. And then right about that time, a couple interviews. Hey, you want to interview this guy? You want to interview that guy? The you know, we don't need your recorder anymore. All right. So if you go back and listen to my original Toby Wright interview where we talked about Injustice for All,
right?
And it went viral. You know, it went viral. It went, you know, Blabbermouth and everything else. I'm like, so it's Justice for All. I slur Injustice for All every time.
Right.
You can, when I drink, you can hear it in my voice too. So I'm not a good, I'm not a good pod. I could never do like long form podcasting while drinking unless it's the CMS coming up on September 10th.
Yeah, there you go. In that case, we will be hammered that night, I'm sure. But yeah, that's the weirdest thing with me is I don't really slur.
Yeah.
So a lot of times people don't know, but I just know every time I get really shit faced like that and do a show, it almost always comes back to bite me. It almost always comes back with the, oh, you're not going to believe this person's mad at you. And I'll be like, why? And they'll play me back something. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I did say that. It's like, ooh, okay.
That's never good when the things that come back to haunt you are on tape.
Yeah, oh, it's definitely not. Dude, I mean, one of the all-time legendary things was me and John one night got all hammered back when he was dating his now wife. And I mean, he had like some video of him and his chick, and we were grading it like we were calling plays on a football game. And I mean, we were just hammered. And of course, then she hits me up and is like, I can't believe you said this about me and this. And I was like, oh boy. It was really bad.
My all-time story on that is the one night we were doing shots of Jaeger. So that tells you right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were at my friend my friend's apartment. I wake up on his couch and I remember just like, at least nothing stupid happened last night. And I swear to God, for the next 2 weeks, I heard stories about I was standing on a table, fucking telling everybody how I felt about them. Like, you know, you're a piece of shit. You're a piece of shit.
Dude, one of the all-timers for me was we had a my birthday party. It was the same year I got divorced. So I was in a really just dismantled place brain-wise anyway. Went out to do this show, got completely shit-faced. I mean, blackout drunk. I don't remember half the stuff. People were telling me some of the it was so bad that Neely pulled the plug. We were doing a broadcast.
Oh wow.
Neely pulled the plug on the broadcast and deleted the show so it would never turn back up again because some of the stuff I was saying was absolutely unlawful, I think.
Horrific.
All I know is I woke up the next day at John's brother AJ's house. Didn't know where my car was, didn't know where my keys were, didn't know where my computers were, didn't know where anything was. Woke up at his house, still hammered. Like got up, not like I've slept 6 hours and now I'm a little bit more coherent. I mean, still I can't stand up drunk. and was like, all right, well, we're going to try and go get some breakfast. We tried to go get some breakfast. I'm just throwing it all up. And it took me like 2 days to get sober.
Yeah.
And then I had to start the apology tour. Which is what I was doing. And I mean, every one of my friends was like, you were just such a fucking asshole, dude. And I was like, sorry, man. Don't remember any of it.
Oh, those are the best, man.
Yeah.
Well, that will do it for an episode of Talk to Me here on NotFest.com. There we go. Make sure if you go out drinking, if you're in Japan, go drinking tonight. And which you know there are listeners in Japan. Japan there for a minute was a hotbed for the Talk to Me podcast. But I wonder if the Japanese thing has anything to do with like less bands touring over there too. You know, you don't have as many of the Dawkins going over there to tour Japan like they did back in the day.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, there's just not a lot going on. Dude, the whole world is just still screwed up. I don't care what anybody says. It's still a mess. So it'll come back. Eventually, it'll get back.
Yeah, it'll come back. And then actually, we will be back next week. So
segue.
Radio guy. Yeah, so for the Talk to Me podcast, I've been Joshua Toomey.
I'll still be Chris Agan.
And we will talk to you guys soon.
See ya.
the Talk To Me podcast presented by NotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.